Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
Bring in show music, please.
This is Squawk Pod, the daily podcast brought to you by the team behind Squawk Box.
NYC, this is CNBC Control 2.
CNBC's essential morning show.
PCR 2.
Every day, get the best stories, debate, and analysis from the biggest names in business and politics.
All right, we're coming to it next.
Today on Squawk Pod. Is the bloom off the berg? The former New York City mayor made his Democratic debate debut, and pollster Frank Luntz says it wasn't a great start.
I think Mike Bloomberg, we will look back at this debate potentially as the beginning of the end.
The coronavirus outbreak is hitting playtime. Hasbro CEO Brian Goldner.
We're clearly seeing an impact, and it goes up and down the supply chain.
And Morgan Stanley acquires E-Trade in a $13 billion deal as Wall Street moves increasingly online.
It doesn't say how many pet or dog advisors. But there's 15,500 human advisors.
Versus robo-advisors.
Oh, not versus AI. Animal.
AI, Joe.
Those stories, plus sage advice from our own Joe Kernan.
There's an old adage, and it's one of the most Jewish things in the world. Don't ever feel sorry for someone who has a Gulfstream jet.
I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. It's Thursday, February 20th, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Stand Becky by in 3, 2, 1. Cue her, please.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. We're live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
First up on today's podcast, the ninth and possibly the liveliest Democratic debate in Las Vegas.
This was the first debate performance for Michael Bloomberg, and the other candidates came out swinging.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
It was also the first chance for Bloomberg to respond to criticism on the public stage. Here's an exchange with Senator Elizabeth Warren as she pressed him to release women employees from non-disclosure agreements that prevent them from talking about sexual harassment and discrimination in the workplace.
I hope you heard what his defense was. I've been nice to some women. That just doesn't cut it. The mayor has to stand on his record. And what we need to know is exactly what's lurking out there. He has gotten some number of women, dozens, who knows, to sign non-disclosure agreements, both for sexual harassment and for gender discrimination in the workplace. So, Mr. Mayor, are you willing to release all of those women from those non-disclosure agreements so we can hear their side of the story?
We have a very few non-disclosure agreements.
How many is
that? Let me finish.
How many is that?
None of them accuse me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like the joke I told. And let me put, there's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them. They signed those agreements, and we'll live with it.
He fielded attacks, as you know, from all sides, and just want to show everybody a quick exchange between Bernie Sanders and Mike Bloomberg.
I believe in democratic socialism working people, not billionaires, health care for all, educational opportunity for all.
Senator, thank you. Mayor Bloomberg,
What
a wonderful country we have. The best known socialist in the country happens to be a millionaire with three houses. What did I miss here?
Well, you'll miss that I work in Washington, House 1.
That's the first problem.
Live in Burlington, House 2.
That's good.
And like thousands of other Vermonters, I do have a summer camp. Forgive me for that. Where is your home? Which tax haven
have
your home?
New York City, thank you very much. Yeah, right, and I pay all my taxes. And I'm happy to do it because I get something for it.
Bloomberg also drew negative reaction from the audience for his comments on releasing his tax returns.
Very briefly on transparency, Mayor Bloomberg, your campaign has said that you would eventually release your tax records when it comes to transparency. But people are already voting now. Why should Democratic voters have to wait?
It just takes us a long time. Unfortunately or fortunately.
Can I comment on that?
Fortunately, I make a lot of money. And we do business all around the world, and we are preparing it. The number of pages will probably be thousands of pages. I can't go to TurboTax. But I put out my tax return every year for 12 years in City Hall. We will put out this one. It tells everybody everything they need to know about every investments that I make and where the money goes. And the biggest item is all the money I give away. And we list that, every single donation I make. And you can get that from our foundation anytime you want.
And this was Bloomberg's response to whether he supported Senator Bernie Sanders' proposal that would require all large companies to turn over up to 20% of their ownership to employees over time.
Absolutely not. I can't think of a ways that would make it easier for Donald Trump to get reelected than listening to this conversation. It's ridiculous. We're not going to throw out capitalism. We tried that. Other countries tried that. It was called communism, and it just didn't work.
Again, that was an answer that I actually agreed with. There were some people who said it's not the answer you give in a Democratic primary, that it's an answer you would give if you were in the actual campaign against President Trump. But that was the one that really resonated with me with, honest answer on that part of it.
Yeah.
Ari Fleischer was on Twitter last night tweeting away as this was all going on, saying that he just couldn't fathom how the whole party, that nobody in the party, when they're asked about capitalism, everybody's there, with the exception maybe of Mayor Bloomberg. I think Amy Klobuchar also said that she was a capitalist or believed in capitalism. But, had everybody gone mad that this is just not what it is. But by the way, look, Bernie Sanders calls himself a socialist, whether it's a democratic socialist or whatever you want to call
it's a strange dynamic.
But that's where we are.
A little bit of a circular firing squad feel for me, or someone
with
said
Bloomberg standing in the middle.
Right, a gunfight in a lifeboat or something like that. But what I'm coming to realize is that Bernie, he's in the center of the stage.
Yep.
He's got grassroots support. And these people are going to turn out. And if he just keeps winning and winning and winning, I don't know what you do. There's a difference between the Democratic establishment and millions of Democrats that are voting for him. And you can't just say, no, we don't like the way this looks, or we don't like our prospects. And who knows what the prospects really are? You never knew. Some people think he might have won 4 years ago if he... So I've always been a Bernie bro. And
You're a Bernie bro now?
Well, you know I'm a Bernie bro. If I had to pick, I'm not sure at this point. I immediately came in and I said to you this morning, what else you got? Is that the six?
You want Bernie because you think that makes it better.
Don't ascribe any type of weird.
Let's just be honest.
Underhanded motives to why I'm
always
a Bernie. No, but seriously, that's the six you came up. Anybody? You got anything? Got anybody else? You got? Where's Schultz? Where's Howard Schultz? Is he done? He's definitely
done.
Deval Patrick, can he come back?
Bloomberg's campaign seemed to acknowledge his difficulty with this last night by tweeting
out. He got better. I think he got better. I didn't see
that answer at the end. Yeah. That answer at the end was a fairly strong answer. His campaign said he's just warming up.
I mean, what's the
tweet of the night, by the way? Do you know Neela Patel, who we've had on the program, the editor of The Verge, writes that Bloomberg is the gap, Bloomberg's performance, the gap between an influencer marketing campaign and putting an actual product in front of reviewers.
Right.
And I thought that captured beautifully actually happening here.
I think in his own mind, he's if you had $60 billion, you really do start thinking that you're just Midas and that you're just the man. And when it comes to the woman, whatever you want to say it, but when it comes down to it, when the rubber meets the road, you really do have to debate. And you need to be good and fast and strong and all those things, none of which... And I started feeling sorry for him.
He did have everybody coming after him.
No, he did.
Which is not something you've seen really happen with the other candidates.
I started feeling sorry for him, but there's an old adage, and it's one of the most truest things in the world. Don't ever feel sorry for someone who has a Gulfstream jet. You just do never feel sorry for someone who has a G650. You just shouldn't. I mean, there can be things that happen.
You know what?
But they can always fall back. You still felt sorry for him, right?
I felt sorry for him.
You did.
I did. Because, as you know, and I've said it a million times, maybe he's not a great debater, and he isn't, clearly. But if you look at what he did in this city, in the public sector and then the private sector.
But we're different. We're different on what we think is competent. And a nanny state to me is not competent.
Well, no, I know you don't think it's competent.
And neither are his other major
initiatives.
You're not. I thought the city was well run under him.
It was well run under Giuliani too. And look at him now in your eyes. I mean, you think he's like a lunatic? Look, let's just leave it at. I'm a Bernie bro. I'm going to stick with that. He's in the center. He's at 58% or something on
predicted. Lee Cooperman was on CNBC earlier this week. I don't know if it was yesterday or the day before. And I guess he said that he thinks Bernie Sanders is a bigger threat to the markets than the coronavirus. And after tonight's performance, you wonder if there's anybody who's going to stop Bernie along the way.
But the market and Trump's numbers go up the stronger he gets because he's could be another McGovern. I'm not coming out of my.
We know what you really think, but put the markets aside.
Yeah,
let's talk real economy. Bernie Sanders wins. You're a CEO in America. You're a CEO in America because this is to me is actually the real issue.
That's the one thing Mike Bloomberg was right about.
Okay,
Bernie can't win.
But but I'm saying if Bernie wins, I think that every CEO in America, not to shame Bernie Sanders.
If monkeys fly out of my rear end, I'm going to have to leave the set. That's not going to happen.
Look, by the way, people thought.
Did you see the movie with Jim Carrey where it does happen?
People thought the same thing of Trump. Right. Even 2 months before he won, people would have told you about monkeys.
You don't really think that. You don't really think that's the same thing.
No, I'm not saying it's not.
Okay, just give me your honest opinion of what is Bernie's. If you had to bet all your money on what are his chances for winning? Is it 25%? Do you think it's that high?
Winning in the general.
Winning in the general.
Winning in the general.
Winning in the general.
A third, no more than a third.
You think a third? See, I don't think it's a third. What was weird last night?
But I don't think it's overwhelming at all. Obviously.
No.
I think it becomes very challenging.
I don't know what would there'd have to be more. I don't know what would happen. He'd have to be the nominee and something else. Anyway,
joining us right now with reaction to last night's debate is pollster and political strategist Frank Luntz. Frank, want to get your reaction to all of this?
I think the whole night was a challenging moment. I want to take you back to 2012, when Rick Perry was moving 3 or 4 points a week. In the race against Mitt Romney, he participates in the first debate and he's destroyed and it ends his candidacy. I think Mike Bloomberg, we will look back at this debate potentially as the beginning of the end because he did not come across as prepared. And more importantly, I don't think he captured the tone of the audience, that he doesn't understand that there are more women than men who are Democrats, that they don't like this aggressive behavior. And I don't think in Bloomberg's defense of capitalism against socialism, he doesn't realize that so many Democrats prioritize socialism over
Frank,
capitalism.
Frank, I want to ask you about the preparedness issue, because will say he only got into this campaign 10 weeks ago, but he's been preparing for this for a very, very long time. How could he not have been more prepared?
Well,
and what were the right answers to some of these questions?
I want viewers to know that I did work for Bloomberg in 2001. And back then, he doesn't like language. He doesn't like debates. He doesn't like that kind of give and take. That's not what he's about. The problem is, it's what the Democrats are about, and he should have known that these candidates were going to take him on. Frankly, I don't know what the response is for the challenge about the non-disclosure agreements. In terms of capitalism versus socialism, he's got to remember, he should know, that the average Democrat is working class, the average Democrat is middle income, and having a capitalism versus socialism debate among the average Democrat, Bloomberg's going to lose that, and Bernie Sanders, and this is the reason why he's leading right now, is going to win that contest.
So, Frank, do you believe Bloomberg will follow through on his promise to spend another $500 million defeating Donald Trump on one of these people that just, you know, completely eviscerated him last night? Do you think once he realized, you just said maybe it's the beginning of the end of his candidacy, if he sees that he's not going to be the candidate, will he follow through and spend another $400 or $500 million on somebody else?
Well, he's not done because we still have a South Carolina debate coming up. And Super Tuesday, if you look at the state-by-state polling, Bloomberg has actually taken the lead in some of these states.
But if you said that it's probably the beginning of the end. If it was, do you believe he will follow through and spend his money to defeat Donald Trump by backing Bernie Sanders or whomever the eventual nominee is? Do you believe he'll do that?
I think Mike Bloomberg will have a problem backing Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren because he simply disagrees with them ideologically on their economic
positions. Do you think last night's performance by Elizabeth Warren puts her back in the game in a way that she might not have been just 24 hours ago?
I'm going to surprise you, but my answer is no.
Okay.
Because Democrats don't like Democrats attacking Democrats. They want you to focus on Donald Trump.
But that's what Bernie Sanders has been doing so successfully, and he seems to be the front runner.
And that's exactly why he's the front runner. And Elizabeth Warren attacking Buttigieg as well as Bloomberg, I don't think that sits well with the average Democrat. I will tell you.
No. Bernie Sanders has been attacking his competitors in this race. No?
He's been speaking clearly and loudly and in a pronounced way, in a position that for the center of the Democratic Party, and they like what he's saying. And he is going after Trump more than the rest of them. I think last night was a good debate night for Sanders because he clearly articulated a point of view that none of you may agree with. But for the center of the Democratic Party, remember, this is not the center of America. For the center of the Democratic Party, Bernie Sanders speaks to them. He's emotional. He's passionate. And it's the reason why he's now the front runner.
And we got to run, but what happens if he is the nominee against Trump, given what you know?
What
are your odds?
For the first time ever on a TV program, I will say that Trump will have the narrowest of advantages.
Narrowest of advantages?
Yes, that's all. This is going to be a brawl. It's going to be the ugliest election ever. And even though Sanders is outside the mainstream, the press will protect him, the media does not want Trump reelected, and it will come down to Election Day.
Okay. Frank Klontz, always with an interesting perspective. Great to see you this morning. Thank you.
Thank you.
Tease will be next.
Next on Squawk Pod, coronavirus fears drag down toymaker Hasbro's otherwise positive earnings. We hear from the company's CEO.
Some of the factory partners have reopened, and yet they don't have all the employees back in place. So it's going to be an impact.
Squawk Pod, we'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod with Becky Quick, Joe Kernan, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Here's Becky.
Up and Becky, Q.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin. The toy industry is feeling the impact of the coronavirus. In its most recent earnings report, Hasbro touched on the possibility of a disruption to its supply chain and its business, noting that there is a disruption to the company's supply chain and operations in China, and that there could be a significant impact on its businesses. Joining us right now is Hasbro CEO Brian Goldner and Darren Throop, who is the CEO of Entertainment One, which Hasbro recently acquired to expand its business beyond toys. Gentlemen, great to see both of you.
Good morning.
And we'll talk about the coronavirus in just a moment. But what I'd like to start with, really, is what we've heard from Walmart and Target recently. Both of them talked about how their earnings were impacted by the fact that toy sales weren't as stellar as they had hoped they would be, that there weren't any hot products that were really out there. What's happening, Brian?
Well, look, we grew in the United States high single digits. We grew overall last year by 5% absent FX. You know, we've seen great growth in our product lines. We have great growth in our gaming business with Magic the Gathering and Dungeons and Dragons. At retail, you know, we've had a great success in the fourth quarter with the Disney properties, including Frozen and Star Wars. Marvel had an amazing year last year. Monopoly grew last year. So what we're seeing is we can grow. We're growing beyond the industry. The industry was down a little bit last year, 4% in the U.S., about 3% overall. But we believe that growth comes back this year. In the industry because of the new initiatives and the innovation that we're bringing to our product.
What type of new initiatives? Because that was something that both the CEOs commented on, just the idea that there wasn't a hot toy like there had been the year before.
Yeah, so we're bringing back a lot of new innovation. If you look at our Nerf business, we had really good momentum in the latter half of last year as we had some new innovation. We just didn't have enough of it around the world. We were short of product.
as we roll that out around the world, Nerf Ultra, as well as some new innovations in Nerf. We've got Play-Doh with all kinds of new compounds, and that's a business that's grown. And then, of course, in our gaming business, outside of traditional retail, Magic the Gathering and Dungeons & Dragons with Magic Arena, you know, that's a business that grew more than 30% for us last year. So, again, great success, great momentum that we have in our business.
Well, let's talk about the deal with Entertainment One and the reason that you all are together at this point. Darren, part of what you do is licensing and finding new ways to kind of expand the business. What are some of the biggest things you're working on right now?
Well, we've obviously had tremendous success with things like Peppa Pig, PJ Masks, truly global brands, some of the biggest brands in the world. We've launched new brands in the last 12 months. One was Ricky Zoom, which is doing very well on a global basis. Our new partnership with Hasbro, of course, will supercharge that brand. And we've got many other preschool brands in development and in production. On top of that, of course, we've got a big film and TV business where we're producing scripted dramas, unscripted TV shows, and, of course, a music business. When we pair that together with our new partnership with Hasbro, they own some of the most valuable IP in the world. And we have an end-to-end content solution where we can take their IP and really supercharge it and get it in front of many, many more consumers and really build on that franchise blueprint that Brian and his team have been
working on. How much of it is about taking the IP that they have and turning it into entertainment product, and how much of it is about taking the entertainment product and turning that into the toy business?
I mean, that's really the great thing about the deal is it cross-pollinates. There's huge opportunity in taking what we've built previously and giving it to the Hasbro team to supercharge that IP. And it cuts both ways. We can take things like Dungeons & Dragons and make scripted TV shows. We can make feature films. We can make unscripted properties. There's so many different things we can do with just that brand. And as you all know, Hasbro owns 1,500 brands. So it's quite an opportunity.
Yeah, it's a really great opportunity to bring together the best of what we do. We will be doing more of the toys and games around Peppa Pig and PJ Masks and, of course, yeah, Ricky Zoom. They're also going to launch new properties. They've already taken on board My Little Pony. Yeah. You can imagine a whole new storyline around that, and then our teams will develop all the consumer products and toys and games.
Let's talk about coronavirus. What is the impact right now? What could the potential impact be?
Well, look, we're clearly seeing an impact, and it goes up and down the supply chain. But first and foremost, you know, we care about our colleagues, and our thoughts are with them. We have hundreds of people that are in Hong Kong and in China that work for our company. As you remember, we don't own factories, so those are third parties, but we have a lot of people in there who are creating our product, who are working with those factories, who are looking at quality control. So first and foremost, we really want to look at how they're doing, and luckily so far we haven't had any issues there. But as you go forward, some of the factory partners have reopened, and yet they don't have all the employees back in place. So it's going to be an impact, and then the question just becomes how it evolves over the next quarter or two.
Brian, Dan, I want to thank you both for being here, and we hope to see you again soon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
We'll be right back.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Imagine earning a degree that prepares you with real skills for the real world. Capella University's programs teach skills relevant to your career so you can apply what you learn right away. Learn how Capella can make a difference in your life at capella.edu.
You're listening to Squawk Pod.
You're beside yourself with excitement.
You know I like deals.
Here are some of the other stories that had us squawking today.
Morgan Stanley apparently close to buying E-Trade this morning. This, according to the Wall Street Journal, it would be a big transaction in the financial financial space. This comes after the TD Ameritrade deal last month with Schwab.
This is a deal that would be a $13 billion deal. Morgan Stanley is expected that it's going to be paying $58.74 a share in stock for E-Trade. But obviously, this is the next step. Again, right, after you mentioned back in November when E-Trade kind of got left behind by Charles Schwab and TD Ameritrade swooping in to do this.
It's more musical chairs.
What happened?
Yes. Musical chairs more than a merry-go-round.
Yes, right? Musical chairs. However, one of the things that's interesting about this to me is, so this will really lift what Morgan Stanley's been trying to do, which is to get much more into this space of retail, right. much more into robo-advisors and all of this, right? That's where they're going. What does this do, though? What I was going to say is Goldman Sachs, for example, you would have thought could have bought something right. like an E-Trade, given their...
Very retail.
No, I know, but this is where Goldman Sachs wants to be. They want to be in retail.
I like to write through. Morgan Stanley already has 15,500 human advisors. It doesn't say how many pet or dog advisors...
Woof, woof, bye, bye.
It doesn't say how many, but there's 15,500 human advisors.
Versus robo-advisors.
Oh, versus not versus AI. Animal.
AI,
well,
Joe.
Who handles the animal accounts? Because people
robots.
Don't speak.
Oh,
they do. Huh? All right. But Gorman, they're giving
deal
away.
Is official,
oh, it's
we
official.
Say. We're hearing
and they're saying how savvy he is, that he's been proving himself to be one of the savvier deal makers. Pride wealth manager Smith Barney away from a weakened Citigroup in the wake of the crisis. So Morgan Stanley has gotten much more. They used to be, when I was doing it, you couldn't really go to work as a retail broker at Morgan Stanley. You wanted to because they had this really great rep. And they slowly have gotten into where. And now they go all the way to E-Trade, which is, I guess it really is, that is notable.
Let's bring in the Wall Street Journal reporter who broke the story this morning, Liz Hoffman. Liz, let's talk a little bit about what this does mean. This is about the retail customers that are coming in. It's going to be 5 million retail customers that are there. And in your article, it talked about how this is really making a move for managing money for regular people. What does that mean for Morgan Stanley?
This will make Morgan Stanley the biggest wealth manager in the world. They're going to have $3 trillion of assets. It is a sort of a last act. You can probably think of it in James Gorman's really 10-year transformation of that place from, you know, kind of a basket case on Wall Street, bouncing around from one trading crisis to another. All of Wall Street is looking for these durable, steady, fee-based businesses that investors like, that regulators like. And this is a pretty high wire act, and, you know, move in that direction.
Hey, Liz, question for you. Is Goldman the odd man out? Is somebody else the odd man out, having with Morgan Stanley picking this off as really the last major institution like this up for grabs?
It's certainly, you have to think, raises the pressure on David Solomon and company to think seriously about their business. They'll certainly be the smallest of the big players after this. And look, E-Trade was that asset that was out there, right? It's, as Will said, it's been sort of had an uncertain future for the last, you know, 4 or 5 months. That space has had a lot of consolidation. This was the one to get if you wanted. And that corporate stock plan business, it's not sexy. No one talks about it, but you can't build it. You can't really buy it. There isn't really another one out there. And it's a great, entryway to the sort of corporate sales channel at these banks.
Was there an auction? Do we know if others either bid for it during this process? Was there a process?
Doesn't sound to me like it was a full competitive process. So, you know, you'd have to think E-Trade needs to get comfortable that they've checked the market. James Gorman is not a guy who enjoys playing bidding wars. So I think you can assume that he tried to preempt this with a pretty full price. Look, the stock has been down, E-Trades, but it really has bounced back from the sort of Schwab offensive in the fall on the commission cuts. So, look, this is not north of the highest they've ever traded. You know, it's a 33-34% premium from before all the tumult kicked off in the fall.
Why the all-stock purchase, do you think?
Well, it's a lot of cash to come up with. Morgan Stanley stock, you know, it is not, you know, its all-time highs were 10, 12 years ago, but it's been on a tear since the fall, and that gives them a pretty good currency. It is dilutive. The deal's certainly dilutive, and the stock is going to trade off today almost certainly for that. You know, they have a currency that's more valuable than it used to be, and I think that at this point is what they wanted to use.
Hey, Liz, thank you for your time this morning.
Thanks for having me.
L Brands reportedly nearing a deal to sell control of Victoria's Secret to private equity firm Sycamore Partners in a transaction that would value that lingerie brand at just over $1 billion. Wall Street Journal reported this last night, and other news outlets confirming it overnight. This had been expected. Sycamore will get a 55% stake in the retailer. L Brands would remain in control of its bath and body works chain. Now, the Journal also reporting that L Brands chairman and CEO Leslie Wexner will step down as part of the deal but remain on the board. But it's a huge shift in the retail landscape, which you've covered forever. Didn't you used to cover L Brands all the time back in the day?
Before it was L Brands, when it was still Limited and Victoria's Secret and Bath & Body Works. Les Wexner has been there, and he's been the one who has orchestrated all of this, but he really doubled down on the mall space at a time where mall traffic was declining pretty rapidly. And that's kind of the fallout that you're watching here. That, not to mention the fact that buying a bra at Victoria's Secret, $60 price point, tough to kind of up that and go from there.
And now there's all of these direct-to-consumer brands, Third Love, and all of these other ones that...
As the world has completely moved away from Victoria's Secret in the meantime, there are things that happen that render certain businesses obsolete. And that
shift in culture.
Shift in culture.
Meantime, they canceled their own fashion
denying.
Show. That had,
right. Yep. Yeah. No denying that it's a different world.
Boeing CEO is speaking out about safety concerns surrounding the 737 MAX. Dave Calhoun's comments coming as the company faces some new problems involving debris being found in fuel tanks of some of its jets. Speaking yesterday, Calhoun was questioned about his confidence in getting that plane fixed.
Very high. As high as it can be. This airplane is going to be incredibly safe. It is incredibly safe. It will get reintroduced. I believe that the pilots who are good airline customers field are going to love it. And then eventually the flying public is going to regain their confidence as well.
And those comments coming after Calhoun took a test flight himself on the 737 MAX. Here's what he said about the flight.
Flew it today, routine test flight. Again, testing the envelope and the maneuvers that, of course, a typical pilot would encounter in the flight. Envelopes, and it went beautifully. So I couldn't have been happier. I always enjoy talking to the pilots. They're very informed, and they love this airplane.
Now, one of the things that I'm not sure people appreciate is 737 MAXs are flying around this country literally as we speak every day, oftentimes being moved, actually, from one location to the other. So people have
without
conversations about...
Without passengers on board,
though. Without passengers on board,
right.
But and all approved by the FAA. In each instance, they've all been authorized to do it.
People on board.
But there's people on board. There's pilots. People, I think,
yeah.
have this idea that they're grounded, and they technically are in terms of passenger traffic. But literally, I would say virtually every day, there is a 737 MAX in the air flying from one place to another, and pilots are doing it willingly.
Did the implications of this story...
tell the audience...
So GE is sucking up to Airbus, and they don't care whether it's here or Europe where they sell their engines. And it's business, Sonny. I understand that.
Look at me.
No, that's a quote. It's business, Sonny. It's got nothing to do with that. But Calhoun must look and say, God, all my old friends, if there's any left, at General Electric, but now General Electric, no loyalty there, going straight to Airbus trying to sell it. And they should. Larry Culp needs to do that to try and get it going. But it's kind of ironic that... You know, Calhoun's over there trying to get Boeing going again, and GE is really trying to get in bed with Airbus in a much bigger way. That's a lead story in the Wall Street Journal. But you need, Culp's got to do what he's got to do.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't happen earlier.
Right. He's got to do what he's got to do. They're going to burn through $2 billion in cash flow in the first quarter because of the grounding of the MAX. So, you know, they got to do what they got to do. How was your birthday?
It was great.
It was, but then the debate kind of... put a damper on things, I guess, for you. Was it a good party? How were Max and Henry and Sydney?
We had a ball.
You were the belle of the ball, weren't you?
I mean, the belle of the ball.
More donuts or what?
Cake.
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 Nice.
Cake. From Milk. Do you know about Milk?
You missed his birthday.
I did.
What did you do yesterday? It was family. Family.
Yeah, we were in Cincinnati.
What?
Your hometown.
Why? Were you doing a chili-thon or something?
No, I have family.
Did you have chili?
We landed in Columbus first. We went to Ohio State versus Purdue. I spent time back in Centertown right outside Dayton. And then yesterday...
You went to a basketball game?
Yeah, at Ohio State.
Ohio State really is they're barely in the top 25.
They did pretty well.
Point. They did.
They Purdue.
I've seen Purdue's been,
Done
betting
well
against.
Too, yeah.
Well, no, they've been, actually, I bet against them in one few. Well, that's cool. And then why'd you go to, you have relatives in Cincinnati?
Yeah, long story.
East side of town or west side of town?
No, they're actually in Centerton, right by Dayton, and then we were down in
Dayton
Cincinnati.
Dayton is great. Dayton's like in the top 10.
The kids had a lot of fun.
They did good.
Yeah.
That's where it's salt of the earth.
It is. It was
Trump
fun.
Country, though, down there.
I saw a lot of signs.
You would not...
there were flags.
I don't know. You better wear a mustache, trench coat, stuff like that. Did you have any chili?
No, but I had Grater's ice cream.
You did? Awesome. Yeah. All right. Go in Montgomery Ribs, which you've had here.
Yep.
Montgomery Inn.
Delicious.
That's the show for today. Thanks, as always, for listening to Squawk Pod. And do you have questions for Warren Buffett?
How are you?
Good, good. Doing fine.
Send them our way. Send a tweet to SquawkCNBC. Use the hashtag AskWarren with your question, and the Oracle of Omaha might just answer them Monday on Squawk's annual Ask Warren show. That will be a special podcast as well.
You have any other things to chat about?
Not really.
Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you listen. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Now we are clear. Thanks, guys.
Earning your degree online doesn't mean you have to go about it alone. At Capella University, we're here to support you when you're ready. From enrollment counselors who get to know you and your goals, to academic coaches who can help you form a plan to stay on track, we care about your success and are dedicated to helping you pursue your goals. Going back to school is a big step, but having support at every step of your academic journey can make a big difference. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.